help them understand why we're doing this, why it's important to the organization, which requires a level of vulnerability from our executive leaders more than ever before. We have to be more transparent than ever before. We have to trust our employees to understand the vision and to buy into the vision, and help them appreciate the fact that the goal is not to replace them, right? It's to help them do their jobs better, to help the company succeed and continue to be competitive. Because if we don't, if we slow down, we will die eventually.
Welcome to the AI Advantage, where modern leaders decode the future of tech. I'm Solomon Williams, founder of Solenox. So here, it's no noise, no hype every week. Sometimes it's just me, and sometimes it's the brightest minds in tech, breaking down what it really takes to grow smarter with AI and automation. Let's dive in. Welcome to the AI Advantage. I'm your host, Solomon Williams. We have a special guest here. We have Jared Lucian. He's the CEO of Bluetree. So, Jared, thank you so much for coming on. I'm really excited for this conversation. Can you tell the audience a little bit about yourself? What is Bluetree, and you know, what's the purpose?
Sure. Thanks for having me, Solomon. I've been looking forward to this. Bluetree Technology Group was founded in 2015. We are a professional services firm focused in helping provide advisory services to our clients around technology strategy and execution. So everything from major technology decisions and how to get to that decision, as well as how do we execute successfully once those decisions have been made. So everything like procurement, project management, but the heavy focus is on strategic advisory and roadmap development.
Okay, great. Like, so I'm curious on it because, you know, with the whole purpose of this and with the AI and so forth, there's a lot of hype and so forth else, because, you know, similar of Solenox is in a similar with in ProServe and professional services. What got you into creating Bluetree? Was it just a moment in your leadership, in your history of your jobs that wanted you to start, or was there a gap that you can see? Like, tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, that's a great question. So a little bit about my background, right? Before entering technology industry, specifically in 2010 timeframe, I was in several business environments, businesses I had started, businesses I was partners with others, but most of those were in the financial sector, as well as quick service, a couple different franchises that I had owned and operated. And when I entered the technology space, it was new, and I started as a sales consultant for a couple of the large notable firms in the infrastructure space. And what I quickly learned over the first couple of years was that the valuable services available to enterprises was too expensive and not easily accessible by the mid-market. Organizations with 1,000 employees, with executives that care about their people, care about moving the agenda forward, do not have the same budgets that would allow them to bring in the level of expertise required by the billion-dollar firms, the eBays of the world at the time, PayPal, et cetera. And so I quickly started forming an idea and a business model that Bluetree was born out of, that allowed us to bring that same level of strategic experience, CIO level experience, which is what most of my team are, former CIO, CTO, CISOs, to the mid-market space, down market, to allow organizations with thinner budgets to still make a difference and become leaders in the technology space.
So with that, as you've kind of built through and, you know, bringing that advisory side, have you seen a little bit of shift just from your clients and just seeing how the trends of the markets is how, you know, organizations are adjusting their IT strategy? You know, now that you're hearing of cloud costs really going up, you know, with the CSPs, you know,
how to adopt proper AI? Like, well, what are you seeing so far in your field?
Yeah, well, right now the market's in a really interesting space, as you're aware, right? We have these really interesting technologies being formed out of AI, and we have infrastructure providers that are doing things with power and infrastructure that we haven't seen before out of necessity to support these new kind of workloads that require these high density power environments, et cetera. And so we've got a lot of new going on, and that's driving progress like we've never seen before. And our clients want to take advantage of these emerging technologies and figure out how to leverage AI. Where we're actually seeing them benefit from it today is typically around operational efficiencies. It's and then data driven kind of reporting, et cetera. So we're involved in projects that where we now can help with reduction of cost because we can shift the humans in our environment, the personnel, to more critical priority focused initiatives, right? The impacting for the organization, less tactical work. We're seeing savings in vendor spend, in contract spend, where we've had to outsource certain functions before for expertise or tactical level efforts that now can be given to a machine. And but what we're not quite seeing yet is revenue impacting activities from AI. Right. And that's where we're trying to get to now. And so, but it's this race. I feel like we are, like, my team is trying to get educated quicker than our clients are, and stay just a little bit ahead of the curve so we can continue to bring value. That's a big risk I see in my company right now, right? As a consulting firm who for years we have been in the position to help our clients where they're lacking the expertise or the experience in-house or can't afford it most often. Right now, a lot of the things that we've been doing for the last decade is being replaced by AI. The market research we've been doing, the vendor research, the evaluations, how do we decide which technology products or services to adopt and who to work with to adopt those and implement them, integrate them. A lot of the tactical work we've done to support the strategic efforts is being replaced by AI, and so it's requiring us to shift our business along with helping clients do the same, and it's this really interesting time that is new for us, new for me.
Yeah, you know, it's amazing because even with it, even with myself with being, you know, leading for Solenox as being on this as well, it's just on having to kind of compare, as you said, it's a much longer term growth strategy for when you're implementing AI, you know, when you're having to connect it to your CRMs, to your ERP systems, to like really have it to really gather the data, but also bring forward what's the ROI or what's the value add that's going to bring to it. And so us having to, at least for me, like having to have that, I wouldn't say stakeholder management, but really have that conversation and really drive that in, you know, in this part that we're even seeing with the FinOps side on the cloud side is reducing that cost. And I've been hearing even a month ago, in the last 2 months since beginning of last year, people are having friction with CSP, with like Microsoft or anything else, because their cloud costs are coming so high. Like, we just made all of this migration over to the cloud, all of our CapEx and so forth, our capital expenditure. But now we want to go back to the private data centers because it's saving. I'm agreeing with you. You're seeing so much. We have to catch up. You know, what do you think that the mid-market leader should focus on right now, as you say, just like to stay competitive versus, you know, as AI, you know, is really shaping that our consulting landscape?
Oh, I love this question, Solomon. Yeah, I think that where we're starting to spend a lot of our time, my team and I, is educating executives on the human side of technology adoption more than ever, like change management has always been a human conversation, right? How do we empower people to be ready for change? How do we get them confident with change? No one is comfortable with change, especially not large change. And so when we talk about major transformational projects or adopting new modern technology, that's a shift in how we've done business before. There's an impact to process, there's an impact to policy, and sometimes that can be scary, for lack of a better term, right? For the people who are responsible for managing those new technologies or responsible for using and leveraging, adopting the technology to do their job more efficiently, which is the hope usually, right? Or part of the goal, at least. So what we're doing is we're spending time talking about the same things, but in a different way. It's as technology is evolving so quickly, as AI and machine learning becomes more prevalent in our organization, how do we prepare our people for readiness? How do we get them comfortable? How do we get them confident? How do we get them trained? And knowing that the old way of doing things was, okay, we're going to make a decision because we need to push the business forward. We want to strategically stay more competitive and stay ahead of our competitors. So we need to adopt technology that's going to help us do that. And we're going to make these big decisions, and then we're going to spend a year or two figuring out how to do it. And then we're going to, in that process time frame, we can train our people up, and then we're going to be good for a little while before the next big market shift. And now we're moving to this world to where, all right, we're walking, we're running, or walking, jogging, running, and now the running doesn't stop, because what's expected is the minute we figure out how to use this thing in this new way successfully, we've got to keep going. We can't stop there. We can't slow down for a cycle or a period, and that is going to become increasingly more difficult. And so it's going to become more and more important, in my opinion, that executive leaderships show their people, in order to retain them and keep them secure in the organization, help them feel safe, help them understand why we're doing this, why it's important to the organization, which requires a level of vulnerability from our executive leaders more than ever before. We have to be more transparent than ever before. We have to trust our employees to understand the vision and to buy into the vision, and help them appreciate the fact that the goal is not to replace them, right? It's to help them do their jobs better, to help the company succeed and continue to be competitive. Because if we don't, if we slow down, we will die eventually, right? The organization will die. But when humans start thinking about change and start thinking about robots coming in, right, and AI specifically, it can feel like a threat, and it doesn't have to be. But for it not to be, it requires a shift in education. It requires a level of investment in understanding the value that we can bring as a human being that is different than what a machine can bring. And I think that's one of the biggest challenges, that employees are going to face, as well as leadership within organizations and companies as a whole.
I think it's, you know, you hear this a lot, and even when you try to adopt AI into the organizations of where you're trying to utilize power users, you're trying to have them use tribal knowledge. And from you get it a lot from whatever, even on the meetings that I have, is saying, we have a power user, we have someone that really knows how to use it, but when we ask them their day-to-day what it looks like, the manager or that employee feels that, is AI going to replace me now that I'm giving this technical document? Mm-hmm. I'm giving the run book, the roadmap to doing what I have to do. And it leaves it. There's that friction that you're not getting the full, understanding of what that role entails or what the pipeline looks like because of that, which is fair to the employee. How do I not know my job will be replaced in the next year or two? So. Mm-hmm. You know, with that, are you kind of seeing the same thing on sometimes of yours and you know, to piggyback off of the next question I have for you, not to throw so much at you, is do you feel like the leadership, when they go through on the AI adoption, that they get so focused on the next initiative rather than the building blocks of that governance in place, that security, as I'm sure as you well know, that gets involved to make sure that the AI or that production unit works to what their expectations is. Does that make sense?
I think so. Yeah, I think you're asking how something to the level of how critical it is that to continue to make progress while taking into consideration security and compliance, the risk associated with doing so. Is that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I think this is a really valid valid point. I think I can speak to this with some level of intelligence because this is something that we've been dealing with for since the beginning of time, right? At least in the professional sector. How do we protect our IP when we moved from a manual to a digital world, right? When computerized systems came into the scene and it became increasingly important to protect our internal IP, right? And then it became about protecting customer data as we put customer data into our systems anywhere there was a vulnerability and there are bad actors out there that will expose those vulnerabilities. And then regulation comes on the board. And so now we have to think about, okay, it's not just about securing data to protect our company, but it's also about complying to external mandates that are put upon us. And how do we make sure that people are educated on what those things are? And we have a process in place that so everyone knows how to do the things that are required of us, and how do we hold our people accountable to using the process based on the policies? as we move forward and we adopt the technology, or as technology, the technology landscape changes quicker and more data is online and available and vulnerable, you know, because of that, it's becoming increasingly more difficult to do so. I talk a lot, Solomon, about the importance of documentation, and because it is very difficult to scale as an organization if we don't have repeatable processes that are documented. It's hard to train new people if information is in someone's head. There's a lot of risk in a lot of the companies we support. When we walk in there day one, there's several single points of failure, right? We have the one person doing that one job because the company can't afford three people to do that when we only need one. And sometimes that one's not enough, but it's what we have budget for, right? And if something happens to that person, they get sick, or they, heaven forbid, they take a vacation, right? We're left exposed as a company. We're exposed because there's a lot of critical, if not all the critical data is in someone's head. And so I preach a lot about documentation. AI can actually help with this. It can make documenting processes more efficient, right? It can document how we do certain things more efficient. Updating documentation is easier today than it ever has been with AI. It still requires someone to say, we need to document this thing and to take action. What AI is not doing for us is helping is right now, at least not among the organizations I have privy to work with, is where are the gaps, right? How do we understand when Johnny, who fills this really important role for us, how do we understand when he's feeling burnout, fatigue, when he's getting too much on his plate, or when we have to integrate with you know, the role that Betty's doing in this other department over here? From a system standpoint, we can talk about integration all day long, but there's the human side of integration that requires coordination, communication, effectiveness, and a machine can help with that, but it's not going to solve all of that. And usually when we start talking about communication, these tools, AI, we find the most success when we start bringing people into that conversation. Mm-hmm. And the hardest part there is putting down barriers, because an individual to have a conversation about everything they do in their job, to your point, the minute it's documented, they could feel like, well, anybody can pick this up and do my thing now. So now my value has been eroded.
Right.
Well, there's some truth to that. There's some truth to that. So how do we solve for that? We help our employees see that their value extends beyond just the things they're doing, right? And that in order for someone to provide more value than the things they're doing, that the tactical things, the buttons they're pushing, means that we have to give them the opportunity to be creative and contribute value in different ways than they ever have been before. And that requires time. Time to sit, time to think, time to ponder, time to try and solve problems, understand what problems exist so that we can think about solving them, time to talk with others, to collaborate on opportunities for improvement. That extra time can be provided with some of these technologies that are coming out right now, right? But it takes the individual to see that it requires them to have a level of confidence in themselves, to see themselves as more than just a widget, just a mechanism in the cog of the machine. They have to see themselves as human, as special, as unique, because we all are, right? And so that's the conversation I'm having with executive leaders right now, is how do we help, as we prepare for the way the market is shifting in such a dramatic and rapid race, how do we help our employees see that they are more than what a machine is? They are not a machine, right? They are unique. They are human. How do we help them understand their value and empower them to bring more of that to the table? Because that is what's going to set us apart from the other organizations who are trying to figure out how to drive more revenue, reduce costs, and do more with machines and less with humans. They're gonna lose that special sauce that makes them truly unique. At least that's my opinion.
You know, I really like how you really bring forward more on the human. You get so caught up, and as we all do, into the next technology, what it can bring, what is the value add, rather than really still looking back at the team, the people that make the organization who it is. With these conversations that you have, Jared, like, what do you and Blue Tree, you know, really do? That what are some frameworks or some habits that you've seen that you bring forward to your clients that help them to keep them, the organizations, agile, but like help them to still look at how they can still benefit their employees and their team as they grow through this?
I think that's a great question, and one I'd love to have a simple answer for, but I don't. I would say one of the things that I am recognizing working successfully right now in this area is doing collaboration workshops in a little bit of a different way than we have historically, and bringing our executive leaders into the room along with the heads of the business units, heads of state and then sometimes, you know, one or two top power employees, power users for certain systems, for operational processes into a room and talking, building trust and building confidence, and talking about how we're doing business and what's working, what's not, focused on technology, but talking about those things that openly about what could be replaced by technology that's not today. What those critical things that the employees and the leaders of their teams feel like they're doing that is critical to the success of the business, that adds value, that it doesn't make sense to to be replaced by technology, or maybe that things that were replaced by technology historically that aren't going well, in their opinion, and why? And having open dialogue so that in a forum that others can hear what they're sharing, leaders among leaders, right? Executives listening to their team of how things are going today, what current state is. I don't think as leaders we spend enough time asking questions in an open environment that allows vulnerability and trust to be formed. Can be fearful, can be scary at first for a lot, but if we as leaders create a forum that allows that safe space for this, I think it can be incredibly beneficial. And we're just starting to see that as we kind of shift our approach here, because a lot of times we make decisions in silos, right? What's best for the business, executive leadership makes those changes. It's financially beneficial. It's competitively advantageous, but the people who are actually the ones managing, you know, the execution or the implementation or the day-to-day operational state, a lot of times get brought into the conversation after decisions are made, and they're the ones that have to figure out how to make it work.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's good for the business and sometimes it's not. And we wait for some assumed or estimated or forecasted ROI to tell us whether or not it was a good idea. And so by bringing people in, when we start thinking about strategic initiatives and what should go onto a roadmap, you know, take us down the path for the next 2-3 years, if we bring the right people into the room, more of the right people into the room early on in those conversations, it can dramatically affect the success of the decisions we're making and the path we're going down before, you know, without requiring, at least requiring a different set of success criteria or definitions of what success can look like.
Yeah,
does that make sense?
No, it makes perfect. I think that's so critical, even for us when we need to sit down, is really, I think the key point of what what I even see is that vulnerability, is being able to really discuss with them, to really understand critical problem solving, to understand where we are, where can we go, and what are the trade-offs, or what do we need to be aware of. And I love how you phrase that and how you articulated that to the point. For folks that are listening, that are other executives or business leaders, you know, what would you recommend to them? How do they take those insights if they're starting off and they want to see bringing the leadership team together? What have you seen, or what are advice that you would give on taking those insights from those sessions to really make real actionable changes, of like a Scrum format, or is it more of how would you suggest to do that?
Oh yeah, I'm probably not going to give you what you're looking for here, because I don't think there's a special template to this. What I can tell you is I don't think it's complex. I think it's really simple. You use the word vulnerability, right? Like I think that we as people are conditioned to be scared to let our walls down. We've been hurt over time. We've been hurt professionally, personally, in our relationships, however they're defined, and that has, and so we approach any type of relationship, especially in the working environment where there's a hierarchy involved, like the different, you know, this relationship between a CEO and a VP or CEO and a low-level employee, there's guardrails, right? We have the employee who's scared of risking their job by saying the wrong thing or doing the wrong thing, not doing enough, right? We not showing up to work tomorrow because their kid's sick, right? whatever the reason they're scared to be honest about, right? And we have the CEO who is scared of affecting morale by the decisions he's making or she's making, and so they want to keep certain things hidden. They're fearful of if they are themselves and they don't put on this confident vibrato, right, character, that they don't wear this mask, that they will somehow lose credibility or lose confidence or lose trust by their people, or that they'll be seen as weak by competitors or the market, shareholders, and then everything in between. Right. And what I see working really, really well is when we have leadership leading with vulnerability, saying, okay, I'm human like you. Sometimes I make good decisions, sometimes I don't. Sometimes I have the information and sometimes I don't. And but I recognize that I don't know everything, and I am driven by emotions like everyone else. Right now, if when I'm in a room where I see a CEO say, I want to lead an organization focused on value outputs, not inputs, and I want to lead an organization focused on the people that comprise this company, and I want us to be vulnerable with each other enough to understand how we can work together better, I'm going to go first, right? This is my favorite line when I walk into a room with a CEO is clearly guarded. It's like, you brought me in here to help you, right? You brought me in to help you because you clearly see that you need help somewhere, right? I don't need to help you and you don't need my help, right? But if you want it, then you need to let me in. Like, not partly in, like, you need to let me in. Otherwise I'm not going to be able to help. And I usually start with, you know, I need you to be vulnerable with me and let me go first. And when I see CEOs take that approach with their personnel, their employees, whether it's the IT ops guys running infrastructure, or it's the dev team building new systems and integrations, or it's, you know, HR trying to, you know, bring on their new HRIS system, or the consultant that is in there trying to figure out how AI can bundle and integrate with all those systems and deliver better data and reporting. Right. When they go into a room and say, hey, my perception is X based on the data, you know, my emotional, you know, experience, whatever factors they're relying on, when they're able to open up and say, let me go first, and now it's your turn. Right. Return the favor and do that usually slowly at first. And then more and more we see this incredible result that comes out of those sessions. This, the empowerment that people feel to be heard, that they're listened to, that the people that they work for, that they actually care about them. And it's not just about money. Right. They care about them, right. And success can be defined in a lot of ways. And when we have people that feel like they're heard and they're seen, they're willing to invest a lot more,
right?
Into, because it's not just about the machine. It's about the people that are like them, right? That are seen as not seen as robots, or seen as humans. And when we talk about like trying to separate the future workforce from, you know, AI and this kind of tidal wave that's coming into the market and moving faster and faster, it's like, how do we be more human? How do we show up and really take advantage of those things that make us unique and cannot be replaced by robots? It's, we got to start by just having more human led conversations.
Yeah. And I really like how, is even when I see that at Solenox, it's really how you brought forward and when they come forward and bring you in as a blue tree, in as the consultant and so forth. So they all clearly have a need, but again, it's that vulnerability that goes through. And I really like how from you really portrayed as blue tree, and what I like to do as Solenox as well, is really be a real partner, a true partner, not only just for the business sake, as well, but really to understand the leadership, whether it's the CEO, the CTO, the CXOs, what is it that is, you know, what's stopping it on, even on a human level, to help, I'm here to help you, you know, remove that. And it seems like, you know, you push that forward, that same ideology. Would you say that's fair?
I do. Yeah. That's definitely fair. I've seen this recently, a couple different examples, right? One of them, in a pre-sales motion, we got brought in to help the CEO who was lacking confidence in where to start as it relates to adopting AI, right? They haven't done anything yet, which we found after the fact that a lot of people were doing things. They just weren't aware of it. Right? That happens a lot.
Yeah.
But they, as an organization, you know, collective body, they hadn't figured out where to start yet. And he was getting nervous that they were falling behind, which they were. And we're in this initial conversation about, hey, how can we best help you? And how do we do something that aligns and makes sense for both organizations? So Bluetree wins in this process, and their team wins in this process. How can we come together? And everything was going great until we got to the conversation about money. And this is just a really small example, right? But typical approach is, hey, this is, right, we're in pre-sales motion, right? So here's what I want from you, vendor. I want you to deliver this result for me, or this set of deliverables, and you tell me what it's going to cost me, and I'll tell you in response to that whether or not I can afford that or want to pay that fee. And we've started taking a different approach in the last couple of years, which is, we're not going to do that. we're going to be your partner, like Solomon, like you are with your clients, right? We're here to help each other. We're both going to benefit from this. I need you to tell me what you can afford.
Right.
Absolutely. Like, how important is this to you? And if you don't understand the impact that this decision or this initiative is going to have on the business, let's help you figure that out first, right? Let's go figure that out together first. And let's spend a little time to figure that out. Let's quantify that. But like, if you are scared to tell me what your budget is, then we don't have a partnership, right. And that's okay. That's okay. If you need time to build into that, I'm going to introduce you to someone who doesn't want to operate in that way, or doesn't care enough, or they're okay operating in that model that we used to, right? But if you want a true partner, then we need to start now, not day one during kickoff and when we're hitting the ground running. No, we need to start now, day zero. Like, so you tell me, you be vulnerable with me. I will be vulnerable with you and tell you, when you tell me what you got to work with, I'll tell you what I can do within that realm to bring success, or maybe I can't, right? But we can have open dialogue if we both are willing to trust each other just enough to say, hey, so I'm now in transparency with what my costs are and what my profit margin needs to be with our clients. And what I'm finding is by doing that, by saying, hey, let me tell you what my business model looks like and where I need to be to remain healthy to make this make sense for us, I'm finding our clients are responding to that well and saying, I think I can afford X, right? Or I don't know what I can afford. But most people don't want to share that. They don't want to say, I don't know.
No.
Yeah. Or I know I should have put thought into this. I know I should put work into this and I haven't, right? Or they feel like they're expected to know and they don't want to expose the fact that, because it's a sign of weakness, whatever the case may be. It takes trust. It takes vulnerability. And that's just a small example. But as we, you know, with that particular CEO, we got to success, and we're moving forward in a great partnership today, right? But we had to get through that barrier. I can't tell that same successful story with everyone, right? There's times when we have to walk away because it's just not a good fit.
Right.
But we need to know that before we walk in the door. And when we're talking about complex technologies, AI, that is shifting organizations, requiring business models to change, requiring us to do things in the market that we've never done before, requiring our people to be more prepared than they ever have been for, and more educated than they'd ever have been before. We have to be willing to trust those that we are working with to be honest on some level and let them show us when they don't deserve our trust, right? Instead of the other way around, which is let me let's little by little, like I'll open up a little more. And 10 years go by and we've gotten halfway down the roadmap that we planned.
Yeah. I think even it all comes down, even from my experience being in this leadership role now, it all comes down to human trust. That's what shifts businesses. That's what, at the end of the day, of what it is. It's this trust that you have. You bring forward the right motion, and even you just, you know, that's such a phenomenal feat of, you know, sharing that vulnerability. Like, here are my margins. This is what it is. Let's find something, even if it's, I'm not a good fit, let me help. And maybe I can bring someone else on as a referral to help you along with it. It really showcases that level of, you know, true partnership for that client, for that person. You know, Jared, I wanted to really ask in terms of kind of shifting a little forward, but, you know, with you, as you've gone through and, you know, being in this leadership role, working with other CEOs, you know, I like to have it in the conversation, the episodes of what I call rocky moments. And in terms of those moments where, you know, you get knocked down, or Rocky Balboa is knocked down, you know, on the fourth round, the fifth round, and you have that inflection point. You have that moment where you get up to that point. You make that victory hit, you know, and it comes through. You know, as you've kind of gone through with entrepreneurship, is there a moment in your time in your life that you had that you've said, hey, I've made this success to get to Blue Tree?
Oh, man. I'm not sure how exactly to answer this question. I've attempted to start a few different companies in my lifetime to date, and will probably continue to do so. Some have been successful, some have been terribly unsuccessful. All a learning experience. The thing that I would say more recently in life, I recognized, and why Blue Tree has been more successful than other organizations that I've invested in and have, whether I founded or purchased, right? It's because I learned earlier in the process and the business development cycle that I did not need to control everything. And I feel like I'm still learning this and how to do this in a bigger way, in a more meaningful way. But I am much more successful today than I used to be on trusting the process I follow and who I hire. I'm trusting the people that I've hired. I've gone as far as to empower them to be successful, and now give them control to do their jobs well and have autonomy. And where I get to step back and focus on the things I do really well, and trust that people are going to show up in the best way possible, and trust that there are going to be times when we all falter a little bit, and that's okay. And just trust that everything is going to work out in my best interest, in our best interest as a team. I've got a wonderful set of people right now that I work with, and I learn from them on a constant basis, and I have financially benefited. The company has won successfully because of these other people. You know, I play a role. I get to bring value, right? Sure. But it's definitely not all of me. It's not even the majority of me anymore. And when I made that shift, Solomon, I have to not only control everything, but I have to validate my own existence, or validate that I am good enough by the evidence, whatever the evidence is coming from, some outside force. When I learned that, you know, I'm enough alone in the world, and this is just a thing I'm doing, and hopefully I'm making a difference in somebody's life or a set of people's lives, and empower people to do the same, then we get to show up to work with a little different attitude, and And somehow we've grown in a way that we were unable to do before when I was trying to control everything.
Right.
It was a limitation.
Really, yeah. It really had it to where it was how you affected and how you internally with the team and just your journey through being that business leader, being the entrepreneur. It's translated even over to your clients now, is what you know from the conversation we've had thus far, just with vulnerability and what brings forward and how can they do the same, you know, mm-hmm. with their team, you know.
Based on our conversation, I assume that you've experienced something similar.
Yes. I mean, I think even with mine, it's just been on, even earlier on, you want to control things and it just, you can't do everything. And even with me having to find the right partners and throughout just the journey, the people have come in, they've made an impact, you know, hindsight is 2020, you know, so having it to look back on, having the right people that have come on that have impacted me, there's no way I could have gotten to Solenox how it was to where I am just on myself. You know, there's so mm-hmm. much that I'm still learning and there's so much that's brought forward and just how life, the universe has worked, just our client, this things have just came about in ways that have showcased that I'm still learning from my own innate ability to what you were saying of where do I bring value? I want to showcase that I'm bringing that value too. Somehow some of the partners that come forward, like they fit that role that only you can do. Absolutely to your point, you know, I'm seeing it and I'm sure other entrepreneurs, there are other business leaders that are listening have their own, and it's a journey of figuring that out, you know,
mm-hmm.
With that, where do you see, you know, what would you like to see Blue Tree at, Jared, like in the next year, you know, what does success look like?
That's I definitely think that from a strategic, you know, focus in the market standpoint, AI is in our future, right? More than ever before. I think we're always going to be focused on the supporting components, infrastructure, policy, process, governance, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
We're always going to need to support our clients with recruiting and things like that. But as it relates to strategic technology roadmap development and, you know, advisory services, I think we're going to shift more and more to vendor management as we find ways to outsource expertise that makes more sense financially for smaller companies to adopt than trying to hire within. And we're going to need to put a heavier focus on AI adoption and AI optimization. And so the adoption part is it's already underway. We're figuring out how do we leverage the data we have to get more meaningful value out of the technology that's available in the market. But those technologies are rapidly improving, increasing. We've got new AI tools coming on the market every day, literally. And the optimization part, I think, is going to be where we end up spending most of our time a couple of years from now. And I think it's going to allow us to continue to have a differentiating value offer in the marketplace and propel us forward. But that's just what we're going to be doing, right? Where I want to see Blue Tree, I want to see Blue Tree continue to move down this path to where our team continues to grow and we continue to attract incredibly intelligent people who are also highly empathetic, and finding those people is not always easy, but when we do find them and when we can attract them in, we end up helping our clients and oftentimes being the catalyst for change within their own organizations and doing the same. My vision and where I think I will be able to say we are continuing to be successful is when I can see evidence that we the team is more focused, they care more, they're more focused on humans and the emotional side of technology adoption than they are the technology itself.
And it goes back to even earlier, as you said, it's so simple, but as more and more as we become so digitized, digital transformation occurs. The human element of which is the empathy, the emotional intelligence, you know, really being able to feel that's to bring those people on is so valuable, so critical, mm-hmm. and brings forward. And that's what makes the change. It goes back to that human trust and what we've, you know, been discussed. So I really love like this conversation, Jared. It's been so great. You know, I always ask for the guest and so forth else to come forward. But if you had a magic wand with AI, you know, I know we've been talking out more about the human element, but if AI could do anything, if, you know, ChatGPT 15 or new models that have come out, what would you like it to do if you had a magic wand, whether it's for the business side or from the human perspective in your personal life, what would you like to see?
Oh my gosh. I think what I would like, I think this is a realistic option that is not yet available to me, but I think what I would like to, I would like a proactive machine, a robot that proactively goes out, has secure access to all of my data, can go out and on some sort of, you know, time bound instance, do recurring evaluations of the content we're producing for our customers, the methodology we're using to support our customers, the way we're charging our customers, and can proactively come back to me without me giving it prompts or asking, and say, based on what I think I know about Jared Lucian, here's the top two or three improvements you should make today, just today.
Yeah, that would be, it's kind of funny you brought that up, because I don't know if you've been catching up with the news with Moltbot and that OpenClaw, of where now it's a huge thing now, but utilized on GitHub, where the AI it's utilizing all of its API through Claude, but it's wrapped around a different wrapper, but it can do everything. It's giving access to your messages, you're truly being that digital avatar, but as you know, just with security and everything, there's been no guardrails. It gives full access to the person's individual of components. So it's been a whole security grab, because the developer, I was learning about it early last week, that has been hijacked, and then it was putting in, you know, prompt injections and so forth. That was where it was losing so forth. So it really showcased what the power of what the market wants, the users want, that AI, and it did everything. It talked as the person, it made a reservation, downloaded a voice from one of the, but Open Labs, and made a reservation. You know, it did everything, but the security, the guardrails were not in place for it. So it was a huge thing, but it really showcases what the market is. And I'm sure, uh-huh. you know, with the business. It's so interesting. It's like, I would love to have that within
bots. Right. But. Yeah. Yeah. And the security aspect is so, like, that's never going to go away.
Right? Yeah, It isn't. It's, even just thinking about it, I'm like, oh, no, I don't trust it that well with agents that well to be able to mm-hmm. my point.
Yeah. And the minute we start getting real value out of it, as no matter what our role in what function, you know, we feel in life, or where we're trying to get value from it, we're going to try and push the envelope. We as you know, humans and generally like society. So but the minute we push the envelope, whatever guardrails were put in place, you know, may or may not, you know, satisfy the need for governance or security that we put them in place for to begin with. So that's always going to be a challenge, I think, going forward.
As in just evolving for it. Well, you know, Jared, thanks so much for coming on to the call. You know, really, again, I really think that this was really valuable to our audience and so forth. So for the folks that were listening that want to learn more about how they can get BlueTree's advisory, or, you know, wanting to, you know, learn more about you, where can they find you at?
Website's easy, bluetreetg.com. The best path is just to find me on LinkedIn and send me a DM.
Perfect. All right. Well, for the guest, for the audience that have been listening, thank you so much. We'll make sure to put in the information for BlueTree so we can go forward. You know, hopefully if you want to get a discovery call, we'll have that in. And for the folks otherwise, if you're looking to have your any engineering needs to implement that, or for the cloud, or you're looking to migrate, you know, us at, you can follow us at solenox.net, and you'll be able to provide that engineering capacity for you. We have a ton of architects, engineers that'll really, you know, do that and have that after you get that advisory from Blue Tree. So thanks so much for taking it in. Be sure to like and subscribe, and we'll check with you on the next episode. Take care, everyone.
Thanks so much for having me, Solomon.
Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to the AI Advantage. This episode sparked an idea, share it with your network. Subscribe for more no fluff conversations on how smart tech drives real outcomes. And if you're ready to future-proof your business, let's connect at solenox.net.